Big fella. That was a brilliant card. I'm not going to lie. I follow a few forums and things like that. It was very mixed feelings on whether or not the pay-per-view was worth it. I felt it was worth it.
100%.
I feel like the undercard was underrated, though. Very, very good.
Yes.
And I believe the main card was equally as good. Now, I want to start off with Davison Figueiredo versus Alex Perez.
Oh, start away. You want to start with the main event?
Start off with the main event.
Just wanted to skip all that and get
no,
a
no, no. We'll work our way through.
We'll work our way down. Okay.
But I thought he did very, very well. He was, I'm not going to lie, he was, his fighting style seemed a little bit more brash. He did have the arms down, bring his head forward, showing off that he had good head movement and that. At one point, it looked like Perez was starting to impose his will. Then Davison goes down for a leg lock. That doesn't work. As soon as he comes back up, scoops up into a guillotine choke. Now, I'm not going to lie. I thought Perez was getting out of it because there was a little bit of room. Davison got a bit of his head up. I think he got up to probably his ear out. And then Davison just kept squeezing and got the tap.
His grappling's on another world. It's on another world because did you watch the countdown to the UFC? Mm. He was talking about his background. Like, he has his, like, his where he's from has their own style of grappling. Like, it's, and they say that the grappling style is used to fight bulls and calves and all that. And I was like, that dude is literally stronger than an ox. I dare say that. And he's a flyweight too. Just the sheer strength and power on that man. I think he's going to be the champion for quite some time. And I feel like the flyweight division has really, really stepped up its game. And he's just, now he's at the top. And there's a lot of competition, but I believe he's going to be champion for a while.
Yeah, well, there is a lot of competition, but arguably the amount of volume in that division is quite low compared to other ones.
Yeah.
There's only 22 people on the roster in the flyweight division. However, you know, you got some big names. We had fellow flyweight fighters, Brandon Moreno and Brandon Royval. We'll talk about that in a sec. But you know, these flyweight fighters are really, really stepping up the pace.
Yeah.
You know, the main concern with this division was 125 pounds. They're too small. They lack power.
Yeah.
You know, that maybe they're not as skilled, so they don't do as many finishes and knockouts and things like that. Things that excite most fans, especially the casuals that don't really enjoy the, you know, the wars going back or the grappling matches and the wrestling. But Figueiredo, he's already showed that he's got power, knocking out Benavidez twice. And then he's also showed and gave a little bit of a snippet into his grappling ability. I mean, submitting Alex Perez, who has submitted many people in the UFC already on his way up to the top to a title shot.
Not even that, but the kid, Alex Perez, he's a like BJJ black belt, and I think someone told me he's on his second damn BJJ black belt, and he's young, he's in his 20s too. Not even that, but he came from the Dana White's Contender Series. So now the issue with Dana White's Contender Series is, you know, will we ever get a champion straight out of that Contender Series?
I can't imagine, just because it hasn't been around that long.
Not yet.
The Ultimate Fighter has been around for a long, long period of time. And we've seen champions come from the Ultimate Fighter because it's not easy. Dana White's Contender Series, I believe they're trying to, like, replicate that.
Yeah.
Although they are bringing back the Ultimate Fighter, although no known coaches are presented yet.
One thing I'm going to say is Perez, I mean, he showed up. He was ready to go. But the thing is, the kid's still young. And I kind of felt like maybe they just threw him a little bit too early into the flyweight, but then again, it was meant to be Cody Garbrandt fighting, but the reason why Cody Garbrandt didn't fight was because he tore his right bicep, and not even that, but we just viewed his Instagram story before we did the podcast, before we started filming, that he has tested positive for coronavirus as well, and is having some issues with his
the symptoms.
Symptoms, yeah.
Like pneumonia, blood clots, things like that, which are a big red flag, especially when, I mean, blood clots and pneumonia are huge, huge symptoms, especially if you have these symptoms and then you cut weight drastically to 125 pounds,
yeah,
that's a big red flag for any weight cut if you're starting to have major blood clots and things like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, especially when Cody Garbrandt's going down from bantamweight to flyweight to fight for the title straight away, of course, it makes perfect sense why he wouldn't want to fight. Now, you mentioned that in the flyweight division, there's only 22 people on the roster. Mm. So who's got the most then? What division has the most?
I actually don't know. I could imagine. I mean, I have no idea, to be honest. But without looking it up, I would theorize that the greatest volume of fighters are probably between maybe featherweight and maybe welterweight.
Yeah.
Just because the majority of fighters, I would expect most men, natural athletes, are within
that bracket.
That bracket, yeah. When cutting weight.
Obviously, because, you know, you can't be 6 foot and in the flyweight division, obviously. But and same goes, maybe there are some short fighters, but not many short fighters in the welterweight division or middleweight division.
No.
Unless they're really, really thick.
Well, bring up the welterweight division. We had Mike Perry.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, lost to Tim Means. Now,
do you think he cares though?
I don't think he cares. Now, he unfortunately missed weight by 4.5 pounds, and I saw a lot of memes saying like Paul Felder being like, "Are you serious? Like, I lost like lost something stupid like 24 pounds or 26 pounds, which in our metric system that would be something like maybe 12 kilos or something like that, which is an insane amount to lose in 4 days, mm-hmm. right? Now, Mike Perry had 57 days notice for that fight, and there were videos of his social media of him eating burgers and eating ice cream a week before the fight. So I believe he sounded very confident about the weight cut. However, it just didn't work out for him. Now, I think it's probably a mistake on his part. Definitely needs a bit of preparation. I saw Darren Till even squeezed in a comment saying I should have been in his corner. But Tim Means did very well. He had a very fast flicking jab. He had a different striking strategy to Mike Perry. Mike Perry did less volume, but the intensity of those shots were incredible.
Yeah.
A lot of those body shots, insane, right? He even actually submitted him in the first round. I was very impressed by Mike Perry's Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu on the ground, switching hands, switching body locks, switching hands for the rear naked choke. I thought he did very well against Tim Means in the first round. However, I have to give Tim Means the second and third.
Well, it's good that you brought that up, because remember when we watched Mike Perry in his last fight? One of the first podcasts that we did, I think it was actually the first podcast that we did, Mike Perry was fighting on that card. And we were talking about his ground game has gotten so much better because he got so sick of being submitted. He
got submitted by Donald Cerrone.
Yeah, pretty much. I think he said he broke his arm at one point. Yes. In there. So I'm guessing, you know, he'd learned from his mistakes. So Mike Perry's actually got a lot more, much more better grappling-wise. But not even that, but I think you just said it yourself, like, the intensity of the shots that Mike Perry was throwing were, like, he was looking for that one-punch knockout, you know, he was looking for that, you know, that sweet spot. He wasn't expecting to go the distance. He just wanted to get in there and get out. He wasn't trying to be calculated. It was a little bit more, he wants to be, like, ferocious. I don't think he was expecting that to go 3 rounds.
I don't think he was, but the Mike Perry did better and better the closer the distance he was between himself and Tim. Now, when Tim started to use that jab to pop, pop, pop and create distance in between them, it started to move more favorably into Tim's direction. Now, something I didn't like was one of the judges. Yeah. Well, two of the judges did 29-28. I agree, right? First round goes to Mike Perry. Second and third goes to Tim. Very easy to see. Yeah. One of the judges did 30-27 to Tim. Now, I completely disagree.
Absolutely.
Right. So Mike Perry, you know, he's striking. All right. So significant strikes may have been slightly lower than Tim. However, on paper, you can't just be like, oh, this one had less significant strikes, so he lost the fight. No, he may have been just less. However, Tim's shots in the first round were quite light compared to Mike Perry. Mike Perry's were so much heavier. You could tell Tim was, you know, being like, oh, right. I mean, he's registering Mike's power. Then Mike also had, I think, about 3 minutes of ground control time in which he scored two takedowns and almost submitted him in the very last bit of the round. Now,
he scored five takedowns. One of them, well, according to the stats.
But two in the first round.
Yeah, they said one out of five. I don't know. And Tim only scored one, like, tried at one takedown attempt.
I think that was later on.
Then again, like, Mike Perry had two submission attempts as well. Like you said it, yourself. When he had him on the ground, he was switching his arms around like he was trying to get that rear naked choke. So clearly, that's got to mean something.
Yeah, it's a shame, and I think a lot of people. Sometimes I might snoop on the comment section, and sometimes on Instagram posts, just to see if anyone agreed on, you know, the ref. And a lot of people did say, I mean, you can't take this like you got to take it with a pinch of salt. Any comments, but a lot of them did say that 30-27 didn't make sense. 29-28 made sense. Poor decision on that judge's part, but it is what it is. We've already talked about in our last podcast why we think we should have more judges, more credible judges in terms of background, as well as do a post-fight press conference. Now, Valentina Shevchenko did another title fight today, defending her title against, I'm blanking on the name. Is it Jennifer Meyer?
Jennifer Meyer. Can I just say real quick, I saw a hilarious meme just before I came over here where, have you ever seen that movie, The Longest Yard?
I haven't seen The Longest Yard.
It's this fun, there's this part where there was a meme where it goes, oh, Jennifer Meyer fans going into the fifth round. And it's a scene from The Longest Yard where Rob Snyder's character gets up out of the stands and goes, you can do it. Get your old ass into that end zone. We got to win this thing. Because Jennifer Meyer's in her 30s. And was it Valentina Shevchenko? She just, like, literally...
Isn't Valentina somewhere close to 30?
Yeah, she's close to 30.
I thought she was, like, 30.
28, 29.
I thought she was low 30s.
Yeah. And she just blew the top off her. Literally, like, she threw 317 strikes. Of those, 249 landed. That's 78%. Jennifer Meyer took a lot of shots. Not even that, but Valentina went for six takedowns. Out of those six takedowns, five of them were successful. Like, that was just, like, it was like a woman beating up her child, even though there was an age difference.
Oh, my God.
That's what
Jesus Christ.
I know, it's a bad thing to say, but just that's how good Valentina Shevchenko is. I feel like Valentina has just absolutely got complete dominance over the women's flyweight division. And what I want now, before we go into talking about the actual fight itself, I feel like she deserves another fight with Amanda Nunes.
I believe so. And I think every fight she wins makes it more and more credible and valid.
Yes.
A claim. To a third fight with Amanda Nunes. Now, Valentina, a lot of people expect, especially the bookies. The bookies definitely thought she was going to win. Oh, yeah. She was a -2,000 favorite.
What?
I think if that I think now just off the top of my head, I think if that equates to, we don't usually do the -2,000s. We do, you know, it's a dollar, and then if. $1.50,
yeah,
$2.60.
Yeah,
I think that equates to like $1.04 or something to bet on Valentina. So if you bet a dollar, you would make 4 cents profit.
Yeah, I mean, what's 4 cents if we're gonna do? We have a 5 cent coin.
Yeah, which means I can't expect that many people to bet on that unless it's on Jennifer Meyer and maybe put a couple dollars on and then whoop-de-doo, you got maybe $20 or something.
Yeah, but there was not really much hope for poor Jennifer Meyer going into that fight. Really.
Submission attempts were possibly, you know, a theory for her chance of winning. However, Valentina, you know, she's battle tested against some really, really good fighters. Holly Holm, Amanda Nunes.
She's got a knockout. She's got a highlight reel of knockouts.
Exactly.
Especially head kicks.
Now, I don't know what's next for Valentina, to be honest, other than an Amanda Nunes rematch. I believe if she doesn't get that, I think she's just going to continue to be there. If she, what is she, 28? 29?
29, yeah.
It's not even her athletic prime yet, so most likely she's going to stay in her division and she's going to continue to...
Oh, jeez, I got that wrong. She's 32, actually.
She's 32, okay.
32.
I thought she was early 30s. Yeah. So, she, well, 32 means she is in her athletic prime.
Yeah.
She's most likely going to continue to fight off those title contenders. I don't know what would be an interesting fight for her other than Amanda Nunes.
Yeah, there's no one really in her division that's really like capable of like at her level. You know, she's just that good. I think that's what it's also the problem with the women's division in general. Like some people, there was a discussion I was talking to. I sort of hopped on with the last set of the you know those MMA chat rooms that were on Facebook. There was one about Valentina Shevchenko and Amanda Nunes and the women's division in general. The issue, there's a bit of a trade-off, like, the women's involved in MMA, like, the talent pool is, of course, growing, right? But there's such a limit to that talent pool because of the women involved in MMA is probably about a third, maybe less than a third of all the men involved in MMA. So there's only three women's divisions, and Amanda Nunes holds the title over two of them. Valentina Shevchenko hosts the title over one of them. Now, if they do a rematch with Valentina Shevchenko and Amanda Nunes, there's not really enough stars after then to carry on the division. They would if Amanda Nunes was to retire, then maybe there's a little bit more of excitement that comes in because they sort of have to reset everything and look for a new champion. But to get on that, the gap between Amanda Nunes and Valentina Shevchenko and all the rest of the female fighters is just too big.
It makes it a difficult kind of decision for matchmaking because although there is three divisions, it would most likely sound quite easy, you know, three divisions quite easy.
Yeah.
But there's a lot less fighters. The volume of their rosters is a lot shorter than those in the men's divisions. Not only that, you know, they shouldn't be that short because they only have three divisions. You know, males have the flyweight, bantamweight, featherweight, lightweight, welterweight, middleweight, light heavyweight, and heavyweight.
Mm.
Now, that's eight compared to three.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it makes sense physiologically because males can differ quite a fair bit depending on build and things like that, whereas... You know, sometimes testosterone, these androgynous substances are biologically the brakes on, you know, some of the female, you know, musculature and their skeleton. I don't know if they could even have, I thought of this in my head actually when you were speaking about that. Would it be possible for females to introduce a fourth a fourth division that's higher than featherweight? Because we've seen some monsters.
Yeah.
Especially the, you know,
Gabby Garcia.
Yeah. but like there are some monsters out there that I don't know. I'm sure they would get by pride standards, but I don't know if they would get by, you know, the UFC and USADA.
Yeah. Maybe we should just let them, like, the UFC just opens up that one division.
They just do an open weight?
Yeah.
They just do open weight, turn up. That's all that. All
open weight, turn up, and they don't pee test you. When it comes to the pee test, they just pour water in and say, yep, they're clean.
Yeah.
Just so we can get a little bit more excitement for the women's division, you know, keep it going a little bit. Like, you know, and then Amanda Nunes, they make Amanda Nunes just look like, oh, what the fuck? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
because those kind of women, you know, you got it. They there's very, very few of those women that exist. I mean, they're out there, but they're probably like smashing rocks in the caves of Russia or Ukraine or high up in the mountains
or fighting men.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know if they could make a division higher than... I mean, maybe. You know what? Maybe. Because Chris Cyborg, when she was at the UFC, apparently she passed a drug test.
Yeah.
The drug test. So, for that reasoning, then we must think that she is natural for her in her time in the UFC. However, before that, I believe she popped for steroids or a metabolite of some kind. Mm-hmm. Now, when she was at featherweight when she fought, and she was natural at that time, and she had a really tough time cutting.
Yeah, she did. I mean, you've seen those weight cutting videos of her crying in the bathtub?
It's horrific.
It's hard to watch that as well. Like, we talk about the history of weight cuts. We even talked about with Antonio Caruso, like how grueling weight cuts are and why a lot of fighters like to fight for one championship is because they don't feel like they have to go through such a grueling weight cut. But then again, it's kind of a kind of, you know, well, it's the terms of the organization. But again, you kind of, or the positive side to it, it shows the fighter's dedication to it. Like, a fighter is willing to damage their body because weight cut can actually lead to, you know, death. It just shows their amount of dedication, how much they're really to like hurt themselves just to put it on the line for what, 15 minutes?
I mean, the UFC is a huge example of heavy weight cuts. Conor McGregor at featherweight looked like a crackhead. Davison Figueiredo, who fought today. Now, Joe Rogan made an interesting point, and I completely agree with him, and I expected it coming. Davison Figueiredo, on the scales, 125 pounds, and you said, oh, you know, he's really powerful. I said, yeah, he's 125 on the scales, but the next day, I reckon he's 155 or something similar.
Yeah.
He is ripped, but he is a big guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's big for that division. He could quite easily be a bantamweight fighter. Yeah,
definitely. Very easily. Well, that's a good argument to make maybe for the future. Maybe he could challenge the bantamweight division.
I think he could transition to bantamweight easily in the future. I would like him to do more title defenses for now.
Yeah.
I mean, that was his second today. I would very much want to see that in the future.
Good.
Because
next he's potentially going to fight Brandon.
Marino.
That's it, yeah.
Oh, well, we can talk about that. So, Brandon Moreno versus Brandon Royval.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon Royval, unfortunately, got submitted in the last second, 4:59, of the very first round by Brandon Moreno.
Yeah.
Now, unfortunate for that is Brandon Royval was, in a competitive match with Brandon Moreno. If the round progressed, I would to the second round, I would have said Moreno won that round.
Yeah.
You know, he out-grappled him and he outstruck him.
Yes.
However, Brandon Royval was very much still in the fight. He was stuck in a very, like a tight rear naked choke.
Yeah.
I think twice, actually, and he got out of it.
But, like, the position of where he was in, like, he literally had his whole wrist over his lower jaw. And Joe Rogan was making a comment saying, oh my God, that is nasty. His face was going red. Like, the fighting spirit of Brandon Royval is unprecedented. I honestly believe that they should run that back. Because not even that, did they say they stopped the fight because of the submission? Or because of Brandon Royval dislocated his arm?
I think they stopped it. Now, I thought something happened because even before he stopped it, he yelled out.
Yeah.
I think it was because he landed on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Potentially, it was most likely...
It was a dislocation.
A shoulder dislocation,
did
right?
Did you see the video of
his coach? His coach popped back in. Well, that's what he was trying to do on the ground. Yeah. While he was trying to move around from the punches, he was trying to put it back in.
He wanted to win that badly.
I wouldn't mind a rematch in the future, but not right afterwards, because Moreno was already the number one contender before there was any of this Garbrandt stuff going on, and he should have fought Davison Figueiredo. He was deserving of a title shot. Because Cody Garbrandt, you know, he has a lot of star power. He's got a big name, and he used to be a former bantamweight champion. He kind of skipped the queue by going down to flyweight, and unfortunately, because he's had issues with a torn bicep and positive COVID testing, he wasn't able to fight. And then we had this fight today, with Alex Perez. I think that fight is very interesting in the future. But I believe Moreno deserves that fight. He definitely does deserve that fight with Davison Figueroa. And I would love to see that fight. Incredible fight. The fight I was most excited for was not the main event. It was the very start of the main card. It was Paul Craig and Shogun Hua.
Your boy did you proud.
He made me very, very proud. He out-wrestled...
Legend.
Out-grappled, outstruck, and finished Shogun.
A legend and former heavyweight champion,
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was very impressed by the way that Paul Craig took his back, and then he just put in an absolute barrage of punches.
It was in the first round, was it?
In the second round.
Second round, sorry.
But not even that, but Paul Craig's got a fucking chin on him as well. He took some heavy shots in that first round.
But he did not evade. He stood there. I mean, he is 6'2", but he just stood there. And he took the shot, and it was nothing. You know, Shogun had continued to win, even outside his prime at 38 years old. He's not as old as you think he is. No. He's 38, right? But he did very well against Shogun, while Shogun was... still continuing to compete at a very high level and win several UFC fights. Now, I would put forward that Paul Craig, he's now number 15. He's got to fight someone in the top 10.
Yeah.
Because Paul Craig comes from Glasgow. My family comes from Glasgow. I had to go for the Glaswegian. He did very, very well. I was very proud of him. I thought he was going to win. I believe he was the betting favorite again. Paul Craig, I believe that was his first technical knockout or knockout in any respect in the UFC. All of them have been submissions. Majority of them have been triangle chokes. He leads the UFC record in the number of triangle chokes in his wins. He's still undefeated technically because, you know, he'll now be 3-0-1. He had one draw. If you didn't know, there was a rematch between Shogun and Paul Craig. Paul Craig took that fight on a very short notice. I think it was like 4 or 5 days, something quite short. Shogun, you know, he was getting ready for someone that was more of a striker. So that's why the rematch was way more interesting when they had, after this big war that they had that ended in a draw, that Shogun was ready, had a full camp. Paul Craig had a full camp. And he had the conditioning that he was able to put a pace on Shogun, and he did that. He flattened him out. He did very, very well. You know, he was close to... He could have probably choked him out. He probably could have choked out Shogun if he wanted to, but because he's so heavy, I mean, what is he, 250 pounds, something like that?
Yeah.
He flattened him out, legs up off the ground. Shogun didn't do anything. And for someone as tough as Shogun... to tap out to strikes, it knew, like, you know that Paul did everything to win someone, a legend, like Shogun's respect.
Yeah.
I thought he did very well.
He just outskilled him. That's pretty much what it was. Outskilled. That's all it is. It wasn't like a crazy knockout. It wasn't like a crazy submission. It was just one man's skill set was higher than the others. Here's another important thing to point out about Paul Craig. When we went to watch the Khabib versus Justin fight, one of the fights was Magomed Ankalaev versus Ion Kutabala.
Yes.
Did you know that Paul Craig is the only person to beat Ankalaev? He beat him back in March 2018 via third round submission as well. So, and Ankalaev, I believe he's ranked now.
Yes.
So, I reckon those two should go again, you know?
That would be a good fight. I still think top 10 for Paul.
Top 10 for Paul?
I think top 10 for Paul.
Who are you thinking maybe would be a good fight for him next?
To be honest, I don't even know. I don't know yet. I still need to think because... It is all nice to say top 10 for Paul, right? But rankings aren't everything anymore. We already saw that now, you know, with the Leon Edwards, number 3 in the division, fighting Chimaev, who's maybe number 15 in the welterweight division. Number 3 fighting number 15 doesn't make sense. However, it seems like the UFC rankings are becoming more and more obsolete and not really that important in any division, any decisions for fights in these divisions. So I'm not too sure. I believe someone, you know, in the high top 15 or the low top 10 for now, because I believe that he was his third fight in the UFC.
Yep. That correct.
No, fourth. His fourth fight in the UFC. Yeah, that was a really good fight. I really enjoyed that. Another person that we were watching out for was Joaquin Buckley.
Okay, here we go.
Yeah, you got your attention?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, it really got my attention because I was going to talk about that next. I just wanted to bring up a few things. Oh, okay. Go on, man.
Joaquin Buckley. Everybody knows him because of this mad knockout, you know, step up, back kick, knocking out Impar Kasangana. I hope I said that right.
Yeah.
And they turned all kinds of cool Mortal Kombat edits out.
Yeah.
Where they go and finish him, and he's back kicking him into several pieces, but he did another great knockout today.
Against Jordan Wright as well. When right off the bat, Jordan Wright, he comes from he's a black belt in karate as well, so he's got a very hot, good striking background. He was throwing a lot of, trying to knock him out of a lot of head kicks. I think Jordan Wright threw about a good 5-6 kicks trying to get in the first round, and it was a lot of roundhouse kicks, as you know, that traditional from the back foot. And then Joaquin Buckley, there was a point where he just went, fuck it. He said in that second round, there was a point where he just went, all right, let's bang. Joaquin Buckley has mad power, mad boxing skills as well. He knocked him down with a left hook. That left hook didn't really even fully connect. They actually, when the replay, when they slowed it down, when they did the slow instant replay, Joaquin Buckley, like, his entire left side of his body from that one strike, just striations. The dude, there was even, like, memes about him on Instagram afterwards, like, saying, oh, he did, like, a Mike Tyson-style knockout. And, you know, the guy's got hype now, and he's built on that.
I think one of the things that he mentioned in his post-fight interview was, he was like, I had to make a statement because he didn't want to be a one-hit wonder. He didn't want Jordan Wright, who was an undefeated fighter, to steal his hype, steal his name, and then build himself up. I thought he did very well. Very impressive knockout. It shows he's got really good knockout power, not only just his legs and the skill that he has with his leg kicks, but also in his hands.
Yeah.
He's a very muscular dude, and it goes to show he's got very, very good power.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him continue. I think a lot of people were betting on Jordan Wright because not only does he have his karate background.
Yeah, he was also on Dana White's Contender Series too.
Yes, he had high grappling ability, and a lot of people were expecting, you know, the good old high-level grappler versus the high-level striker, and thinking, well, the grappler is most likely going to win, so they bet on Jordan Wright. Sometimes it only takes one, and I think someone that has power like Joaquin Buckley.
Do you reckon he deserves a ranked opponent next?
Yeah.
And I reckon they should put him on the main card next.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie, this prelim, the prelims were very good.
Very, very, very
good.
Very
good. I believe it was the main card wasn't super stacked, but across the entire card with the addition with the really good prelims,
yeah,
it was a very good card.
Well, I was going to say, this morning we were supposed to go and watch it somewhere, but we couldn't find anywhere to watch it because nowhere was playing anywhere. To all those pubs and bars that you called, shame on you. You guys, like, missed out.
Well, a lot of them only open at 11 a.m. and, you know, the fights are going to, well, you don't want to wait that long because you want to watch the prelims.
Yeah,
because,
I mean, they would have missed out on, four fights were in the prelim card. Three of them were either three of them were finishers in the first, either first or second round. I mean, even Antonina Shevchenko.
I was just about to say that they both went 2-0.
I mean, she did really well. Again, she won by taking Lipski's back and then just giving her this barrage of punches. But Antonina Shevchenko really turned the taps on her when it came to the grappling.
Turn the taps on her.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
Turn the taps. Yeah. Turn the taps on
Turn up the intensity, you know what I mean.
Turn the taps on her.
Yeah, because she pushed her up against the cage and was really trying to wear her out. And then there was some strong potions to be thrown. I mean, Lipski was really, really trying to give it to her as well. But when Antonina had her against the cage, she almost looked like she was a bit out of her, was it? You know, she was a bit limited in options.
Out of her comfort zone, for sure.
Yes, correct.
I mean, that was a brilliant card. I really enjoyed UFC 255. I thought that was brilliant. And we did say this before the fight. We said we are expecting finishes in this card, and that's exactly what happened.
We got him.
We did.
Yeah. Well, I mean, not even that, but there's a whole bunch of like news going on around that's like surrounded this. Well, first things first. McGregor and Poirier is now official.
Finally.
Yeah, how many? So it's like, yeah.
It was like a week or maybe 2 weeks. No, well, it was about like Dustin Poirier, he'd signed. We knew that Conor McGregor had his contract. But maybe a week or maybe a week and a half, Conor signs. Yeah. I can only, you know, they were just saying like, oh, the negotiations are going in the right direction. But I was like, how much do you got to negotiate? Do you have to negotiate a stadium with them? Maybe. When it comes to a live audience, I'm not too sure. Although Dana has confirmed it's most likely going to go to Fight Island.
Yeah. Well, the other thing that was a lot of bit that would probably be hard to negotiate would be on Poirier's end, because when Cowboy fought McGregor at the start of this year, you got, what, 40K for that fight? Roughly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Poirier's going to be like, fuck you, I'm worth way more than 40K. You know, I'm a former champion. You know, he put on an absolute show against Dan Hooker in his last fight, you know? I reckon Poirier is not to be underestimated in this fight against McGregor.
There was an interesting post that I saw, and I believe Poirier, in his fight against Dan Hooker, I believe he made something close to $100,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
And they compared it to Paul Felder. He gets given $235,000 as a part-time commentator. And people were, you know, justifying why Dustin Poirier wants that pay increase, because he's been there for such an incredible long time, and he's done such a huge, amazing run at lightweight, achieving interim lightweight champion status. He's done so much for the company. He's had so many performance of the night bonuses. Pay him his dues and give him more money. Yeah. I think Poirier did the right thing to wait out the Tony thing and all these negotiations. You know, he scored the money fight with McGregor.
Yeah.
And it's funny because a lot of the McGregor memes are him saying, you're blessed that I chose you. And a lot of them go, no, fuck you. You're easy money.
Mm.
Dustin's going to be like, yep, thanks, Conor. I really needed that higher paycheck because they didn't really want to pay me. Yeah. You know?
Well, I understand why, but if there's anyone who deserves a rematch of Conor, if you look at all of Conor's fights, if there's one person who's come the most way since his loss, is Poirier. Mm. Poirier, because McGregor fought Poirier in one of his early fights.
Or Holloway.
Or Holloway, yes. Yes, that's a fair argument. But then again, Poirier's beaten Holloway.
Mm.
So that's why. Because I'm pretty sure most of his most of Conor's previous fights that he's been, really, I mean, they've sort of gone down a little bit. You know, Eddie Alvarez doesn't fight at the UFC anymore, gone to one championship. Holloway became champion, but lost his championship and then lost his rematch as well. Poirier made a way to champion, put on a good show against Khabib, and then, but even though he lost the champion, now he's come back and he's winning and there's a lot of hype around him and he's still one of the best ranked fighters in the lightweight division.
Yeah.
And not only just that, but just Poirier's skill in general. When he lost to Connor, he lost first, I think it was in the first round. First or second round?
First round.
Yeah, and he was kind of humiliated a little bit, you know what I mean?
I believe it was in the first two, maybe 3 minutes.
There you go. Of the round. And since then, he took that, and then he ran with it, and then he's gone on a... And he's been fighting in the UFC for, what, nearly a decade?
It wouldn't be far off. And yeah, something that's interesting, because you mentioned like him going up to lightweight, and then he's seen such a meteoric rise... I think what's interesting is, and he's mentioned this himself, when he was at featherweight, it was a hard cut for him, just like it was for Connor. But he said it was a very hard cut for him. And most of his training, well, a lot of his training was activity to let it get him to lose the weight rather than prepare for a specific opponent and be the best Dustin Poirier on that night. When he went to lightweight, he's improved so much in terms of skill and I think conditioning as well. We see him all the time. Is it Phil Darrow? The strength and conditioning coach.
Phil Darrow.
Yeah. The strength and conditioning coach that he has, you know, he's an exceptional coach as well.
Yeah.
And skill wise, Dustin Poirier's boxing skills are one of the best in the lightweight division, if not several divisions.
Yeah.
So I think Dustin Poirier, when he comes to fight Conor McGregor on January 23rd, perhaps in Abu Dhabi, although it may lack a crowd, it's going to be an excellent fight because I think it's going to be one of the best Conors we've seen. Yeah. It's going to be one of the best Dustin Poiriers we've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting with Conor is because Conor, he's shaved his head.
Yeah,
he's shaved his beard pretty far back.
He's on a clean slate.
I think he is. And I think, do I reckon it is? I think it's a mental thing. I think he's done it as him, like, reimagining himself as his old cage fighter. Cage warrior days. You know, when he was back there trying to get the featherweight strap and then the lightweight strap. I think that's his way of bringing down the cutting back the layers and, like, working back on his... and focusing on what got him... What started the obsession of martial arts in the first place before the money started interrupting motivation and things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something else I wanted to talk about on this podcast now, because we talked about this yesterday and steering away from UFC. We'll step back to it. But Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. is now in officially 8 days, I believe. Or 7 days.
I think it's 7 days.
7 days. I think it's a week from today.
Yeah.
So... And the photos of Mike Tyson that are coming onto his social media, I want to say it's Photoshop, but I don't think it is. Like, Mike Tyson looks phenomenal.
Very good shape.
He looks like almost like he's back in his prime, like that. How quickly he managed to get back. You know, we talk about muscle memory, and, you know, obviously it's easy to get something back that you already had rather than start from scratch and build something new.
Yeah.
So, but I didn't think he was able to get back that much. He looks thick, man. Like, Roy Jones Jr., I mean, he was the king of the 90s, and he's only been out of boxing for a couple of years.
I think less. Less? Just over a year.
Yeah, but... What is it? Mike Tyson, he's been out of boxing for quite some time. How quickly he's come back now to that position. I mean, I got a feeling we're going to... For guys their age, I don't really think they could both make the distance, play the distance, you know what I mean? But I feel like the moment that first bell goes off, it's going to be a very, very intense first round.
I think Roy has the conditioning.
Yes, perhaps.
And the fighting style to go the full rounds.
Yeah.
I question Mike's.
Yes.
Because his fighting style didn't tend to do well. The later his fights went in the round, the higher the percentage went up for that other person winning. A lot of Mike's most impressive wins and the majority of the volume of his wins tended to be closer, you know, to the starting rounds of the fights. I don't know who I want to back in this. I sway towards Roy,
yeah,
to be honest.
I sway towards Mike because I feel like Mike just wants to get in there and just put him away. Because Roy will want to make the distance because I feel like Roy knows that maybe Mike's got a history of, you know, gassing out early and not really, like, in those last couple of rounds, like, really start to fade. But, you know, but again, Mike Tyson's got mad, he's known for his mad power, his mad aggression. You know, he's going to want to try and put him away early, but Roy's got some serious, like, serious skill. He's known for ducking and taunting his opponent. So, you know, it is a question I would ask, though. What would it have been like if they both fought when they were in their prime? Because Mike, Roy Jones came into, like, really came into his prime when Mike was on his way out.
Yeah. I don't even know because Roy was so, I mean, they were both very elusive.
Yes.
It was Mike Tyson's elusiveness paired with his, like, destructive power with that peekaboo style. And that, like, killer mentality that Customato kind of, like, produced in his head. And then there's Roy's long, long, like, boxing history, boxing from a young age because of his father. And then he doesn't have a real relationship with his father anymore. But Roy's incredible run through several divisions made him such... I mean... I think a lot of people will think that if Roy didn't, you know, fight as much near the tail end of his career, that he would be considered one of the greatest ever. Yeah. Like, if not the greatest, yeah. Right?
What are they, what way are they fighting at?
That is a good question. I believe, because boxing weights can be very funny. It can definitely be very funny because they, sometimes they have quite small increments. I know you said you were going to go for Mike because Mike's got quite destructive power. Most likely power is probably the last thing to leave a boxer. Speed typically starts to dip. I think Mike looked very good in these promos and things like that. I question if he can continue that same pace at his age later in the fight. He's very destructive maybe in those first rounds, especially if they're 2 minutes instead of 3 minutes.
The 8-round exhibition fight.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and they're going to be fighting with 12-ounce gloves.
Yeah.
So, that's usually a little bit, that's above, you know, their typical 8-ounce gloves. So, what's the other thing?
But much smaller than an exhibition set of gloves.
Yeah.
Because an exhibition typically has much larger gloves with headgear. Whereas, you know, in this exhibition, they're not doing that. I sway towards Roy because Roy... has been boxing for
heavyweight, has been
boxing for, you know, a real long time, just like Mike, however much more recently, and I think Roy's pace and his speed is still there. I mean, that left hook is insane, and I think Roy has a weird style that a lot of sparring partners I don't think can replicate. You know, he starts his combinations with a lot of hooks and things like that. And sometimes he's not throwing just one hook, he's throwing several. The way he puts combinations together and things like that, and his movement, I don't think can be replicated by most sparring partners. Now, I've asked you before, I've watched the documentaries, like the series they have on YouTube and things like that. I think you have as well, the docu series I think Thriller and Worldstar have made. Have you seen any sparring yet?
No, I haven't.
I haven't seen any sparring
all
yet.
All I've seen is just lots and lots of those videos of Mike hitting pads.
It looks scary.
I feel sorry for his training.
When he's hitting that water bag, I'm like...
Yeah.
The aqua bag, I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. I actually almost feel sorry for what he's hitting, really. It's just...
Yeah.
I mean, well, the other thing we also talked about yesterday was Israel Adesanya is going to be commentating the fight. I didn't see that coming.
Apparently, I mean, this is like hearsay, I think, but there was a manager that Well, he kind of got outed on Israel's Instagram and things like that for being a bit of a clout trout.
Yeah.
for coming after Izzy and trying to be a manager for him. But, you know, he's managed many, many stars in the UFC. And he actually commented below on Izzy's photo that he was going to be, commentating as a, maybe possibly as an analyst. As that fight progresses with the Roy Jones and the Mike Tyson, but apparently, Gamebred Masvidal was offered it, but turned it down.
Why do you think he turned it down?
I don't know. Maybe if Roberto Duran came back, then he would be very keen. Yeah. But because I'm not too sure. Good for Izzy. I think a lot of good shit's happening for him in 2020. You know. Has his title defenses, two title defenses, signs with Puma, possibly going up to fight Jan Błachowicz for the light heavyweight strap. He becomes
on the cover of EA, UFC 4.
EA Sports. He's an analyst slash commentator for this Roy Jones fight, who apparently he's a very big fan of.
Yeah.
This is like the, I think this is the year of Izzy.
Technically, it's been 2 years of Izzy.
Yeah, it's been 2 years of the Adesanya. I want to see if he can do the treble next year. If he does the treble, it sets up some really good stuff, I get, with John Jones and things like that. John Jones.
Thick.
Big boy. And not like thick, because a lot of people make jokes like thick when really you're fat. But
he's 105 huge. Kilos already.
Yeah, 240 pounds, 100 and how many kilos?
I said he was like
120.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I know as we put up that I put up that photo on the last
108 kilos.
Yeah, I put up that photo of him on. I put that photo up of him on our Instagram, and I was like, "Oh my god, he bulked up quickly, man." He looks like Mike Tyson in his prime.
Yeah, except he's not quite short. He's a big, tall guy.
He's huge, yeah.
And he's got very... And I was surprised that he looked that big for someone that has such long limbs.
Yes.
Although, I did expect him to get a lot thicker and a lot bigger. I mean thicker as in like thicker muscle size and thicker legs and thicker arms, because when he was fighting in as light heavyweight, he did have quite thin... I mean, they used to call him chicken legs.
Yeah, he had ridiculously small calves.
Yeah, but now moving up to heavyweight, which he says is going to take another few months, I'm like, what more stuff do you have to pile on? Maybe he has to sort out the conditioning while staying at that weight, because there's a lot more demands of your system for going five rounds with a lot more muscle mass, especially like with the amount of explosiveness he's probably going to carry to heavyweight. It's very interesting. What we're going to see from John Jones. It's an interesting fight. Yeah. And
we don't have a set date yet, do we?
No, but whatever fight John Jones is, it's typically very, very like exciting.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'll go straight up and fight the champion. I'm not too sure, because he's vacated the championship, so it's not like he's becoming a double champion. Yeah. He may fight maybe a top five and then move on to the champion, depending if at that time the heavyweight championship belt is already being contested at a separate date.
Well, I would love for him to fight Francis for first fight.
Yeah, that'd be a crazy fight against.
No one wants to fight Francis.
That's a mad, like maybe a Derek Lewis or something like that.
We're just going to say here on the podcast, call it first fight. I would like to say Francis versus Jones.
Oh god. I think I see Stipe versus Francis happening. And then I see, who else is in the top 5 net right now? Cuz I'm
Teixeira.
Yeah. No, Teixeira is light heavyweight.
Oh, wait.
Teixeira is light heavyweight.
Heavyweight would have to be
there's like Derek Lewis.
Yes, he's fighting Blades next week.
Who else is in the heavyweight division that's looking very interesting lately? As of late, Alexei Oleinik. He lost actually. Derek Lewis.
Curtis Blades.
Curtis Blades, but Curtis Blades is just about to fight Derek Lewis.
Yeah.
possibly what the either the winner or the loser of Derek Lewis versus Curtis Blaydes. I think that would be a good one.
Yeah, I mean, Stipe is first, Francis Ngannou is second, Curtis Blaydes is third.
I'm blanking on the other Russian fighter. Now, for a second, I just thought Alexei Oleinik, but it's not him.
Alexander Rakic.
Alexander Rakic, yeah, but no, I'm talking about a Russian fighter.
Oh, Russian.
I can't remember. Anyway.
Oh, maybe a Rosenstreich or an Alistair Overeem. Or a Santos.
I think a Rosenstreich or an Overeem would be a good fight because, you know, Overeem, big name, been around for a really long time. Jones, big name, been around for a long time. For them to fight Overeem or a Rosenstreich or a Curtis Blaydes or, you know, one of them would be incredible. Or Derek Lewis against John Jones. That would be a fight I really want to see. A couple of fights I wanted to throw your way just for you to react to. I'm sure you've seen one of these fights, but there's one I'm not too sure if you've seen. Now, Chaos Williams, incredible knockout that he did in his last fight. I believe it was on the Dana White Contender Series. Now, he's been confirmed to fight Michelle Pereira, who we know is a very exciting, dynamic capoeira fighter. That's a really, really cool fight to see as well. And an even bigger fight that I think you'll find really interesting, Tony Ferguson. We thought we might see a Tony Ferguson versus Michael Chandler. That'd be a really cool fight to see. Tony Ferguson is fighting Charles Oliveira, and Charles Oliveira is considered perhaps the dark horse of the lightweight division and quickly climbing the ranks. That's a really cool fight, and I'm expecting a very high-level grappling match.
Ooh. Okay. Yeah, I agree.
Very high-level Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
I agree. You know what? I feel like that's a good way to end it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because Olivia, no one's talked about him for some time, and nobody wants to fight Ferguson. Ferguson's like, if you want to fight Ferguson, they're going to ask for a big-ass paycheck, because you know, other than his last fight against Gaethje, anybody who fights Ferguson loses a piece of themselves afterwards. Their face looks like a train wreck. Mm. So, and then Oliveira's put up his hands, said, yep, give me the boogeyman. Hats off to him. I think he wants to prove himself. I feel like maybe if he beats Ferguson, I'm just saying a big if, that really, really puts him ahead in the lightweight. Who could be next for the championship?
Puts him in major spotlight as well because, you know, Charles Oliveira, his submissions are incredible. I mean, not that Tony's aren't, but Charles, he does such an incredible job on the ground. You know, Tony always has this, you know, this aura around him that, you know, if his striking won't catch you, his conditioning and his ground game will catch you. When it comes to his darces or maybe his triangle chokes. You know, I am expecting a really high-level match of grappling and submission attempts, and that's a really, really interesting fight to watch. I don't know if it's got a lot of casuals interested, but fuck in hell. That is a good fight.
Yeah.
Whoever set that up, that is a good fight.
Yeah. Well done. Well done to set that up.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
I think, yeah, that was a really cool podcast to make.
I'm happy with that one. Yep.
Sweet. All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks so much for listening.
And as always, if you're not subscribed, subscribe. We're trying to get over 30 podcasts out before the end of this year. I think this is 27. If you're not subscribed to us yet, please do, because the majority of other people who watch us don't even subscribe. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and of course, Twitter, but we barely ever use Twitter. Facebook and Instagram is the main two.
Facebook, Instagram, a little bit of Twitter. If you wanted to look at any of our streaming services, any information from us, I suggest go to our Instagram, click on our bio. It will bring you to a link tree with all our links and all our streaming services, all our social media, and you can run for your life.
Yep.
Sweet. Thanks, guys.
All the best, guys.
Bye-bye. Take care. Bye.